Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. It looked like the gruesome buffalo hunts of the old Wild West in Zanesville, Ohio last week. A collector of exotic animals let loose almost 50 huge and deadly predators, then apparently shot himself. Local police hunted down the beasts and killed them. Dead Bengal tigers, bears, lions laid out in rows, mounds. It was shocking. But with the trade in exotic animals in this country so large, maybe we shouldn't be surprised. This hour, On Point, the Ohio animal tragedy and the trade in lax laws around exotic animals. Here from last week, when we were all in the thick of this, just amazed at what was happening, was the county sheriff there, Matt Lutz, in an interview with ABC's Good Morning America, explaining why police had no choice, he said, but to hunt down and kill the tigers, lions, and other animals let loose by Terry Thompson in Zanesville, Ohio.
You know, I understand there's going to be people upset. Our deputies are upset that they had to do what they had to do. But at the time of this incident, I made that decision as well as what the deputies had in front of them. And at this point, you know, as I've said before, we do not carry tranquilizer guns in our car. We called for the wilds and we called for the zoo immediately. But, you know, there is a travel time involved there and a preparedness time to get ready for that. The other hurdle we had was darkness.
And down came those animals, nearly 50 shot. We've all seen the photographs. It was something just unbelievable, hard to imagine it right there in Ohio. Joining us first today from Columbus, Ohio, is Tom Borgerding, managing editor and reporter for Columbus's public radio station, WOSU. Tom, thank you very much for being with us.
Well, hello, Tom, and good to talk with you.
How's Ohio been taking this on board? That was just unbelievable last week. The whole world was watching. What's the state of things today? Is everything back, either what buried or back in the pens at this point? Where does it stand, Tom?
No, it is still definitely almost a constant topic of conversation. And, of course, with the national spotlight and the international spotlight on Ohio, both the government and individuals and also groups involved are trying to respond to this because it was something that I think was... It wasn't generally known in Ohio about how many menageries, private menageries, we have in the state, but the people in Zanesville and Muskingum County, just east of Columbus here, were certainly aware of Mr. Thompson. It had been stories in the paper, and they knew that he collected these animals. So, but this national spotlight is and international spotlight is very bright on Ohio right now, obviously.
Here was Terry Thompson. This is on a farm just outside of Zanesville there, up on top of the hill, animals in pens and cages, and some in the garage. In his house, we read lions, tigers, cheetahs, wolves, giraffes, camels, bears. He had a lot of history with the local government there, right? I mean, he'd run afoul of the law dozens of times, I'm reading here, over questions about whether his animals were being fed regularly, kept in sanitary conditions. What was the level of official awareness of what was going on there?
Well, the sheriff, Matt Lutz, said he had been out to the property probably at least five times since 2004. And I guess the interesting angle to this is that he never exhibited the animals. He was investigated actually by the U.S. Department of Agriculture. One time they had received a complaint that Thompson was exhibiting his animals, which is against federal law.
Mm-hmm.
But the USDA did an investigation. He was never cited for the violation. And under Ohio law, he was allowed to own them. Obviously, he couldn't exhibit them in Ohio either. But
we all know, we saw that he at least once, I think, took a lion cub to New York City to be photographed with the supermodel Heidi Klum there. Does that count as exhibiting?
I'm not sure about that. I don't think it counts in Ohio, probably. But, you know, the point was is that these agencies and law enforcement were aware of him and were unable to nail him really on any violations of law.
Now, he had recently been in prison for, I guess, about a year on illegal firearms charges. He'd been out for not that long. What is the understanding at this point of just what happened there, why he let the animals go, why he, apparently shot himself in the, there? I think they found him in the driveway after everyone became aware of what was going on. Why? What's the story? Do we know?
The motivations are still unclear, even almost a week after this happened. There were some financial problems. He was being pursued by the Internal Revenue Service for back taxes, and his marriage had broken up. Matt Lutz, the sheriff, indicated that, you know, he may have been even depressed, but you know, there's really no clear motivation that we can determine at this point. The reaction in the community, Steve Tichak, he was in the area the day that this happened. He said he was a bit alarmed when he heard some of the animals remained on the loose, but not scared. And he said, you know, it just might be the down economy. He blamed it on the fact that there was took a lot to feed these animals, and Thompson obviously in some financial straits. So.
Yeah. Yeah,
but the motivation at this point still is unclear.
The whole thing is kind of amazing. Now we're reading headlines. This is in the Zanesville Times-Recorder saying Ohio has at least 20 farms like Thompson's.
That's right. Outreach for Animals listed actually seven in the Columbus Dispatch over the weekend. I counted seven known private menageries and 172 big cats and, of course, bears and wolves. Monkeys, chimpanzees. So yes, there's quite a collection, and these are all over the state. Tom, Zanesville's a little east of Columbus, but these private menageries really are—they dot the entire map of Ohio here.
The reporting is that Terry Thompson said that most of his animals, authorities and friends there said, had been purchased legally at local auctions. Do you have that big a kind of an auction scene in cheetahs and leopards and giraffes and tigers, lions?
There are regular animal auctions, which include exotic animals, in Northeast Ohio, in what is Amish country here, and they sell everything from chickens to puppies and big cats, wolves. And so yes, the exotic animals are included in these auctions at times, and that's one of the responses from the governor. He issued an order Friday afternoon, an executive order. Saying that he wants to use existing laws to document both the exotic animal operations and determine whether these auctions are, in fact, on the up and up.
Did you say Amish country? Are the Amish involved in this exotic animal trade?
The Amish are involved in these auctions, and whether or not it's a third-party auctioneer or the Amish, sometimes, obviously, a third-party auctioneer comes in. Sometimes, but the Amish are definitely run these auctions, yes.
Wow.
In Northeast Ohio.
Wow, stranger and stranger. Now, Ohio is just one of just seven or eight states around the country, Alabama, Nevada, North Carolina, West Virginia, South Carolina, Wisconsin, that have no ban on owning exotic animals. But wasn't there an effort to get such a ban in place? What happened to that, Tom?
There was. Governor Ted Strickland, our former governor, did have an executive order that banned ownership of exotic animals, but it was allowed to expire. Governor Kasich, our governor who took over in January, allowed it to expire. He said it lacked teeth, and there were no resources to back it up. Kasich, during his Friday afternoon news conference, he said, you know, governors can't just invent laws, so he issued this executive order that uses existing laws for in agriculture, health, and natural resources departments, and ordered those three departments basically to inspect and determine whether all these operations are legal under existing law. But that executive order that banned exotic animals, that was allowed to expire by Governor Kasich. And I will say that that's one of the points that animal rights activists are upset about, the fact that that executive order was allowed to expire.
And now Governor Kasich's ordering inspection, but your fundamental law doesn't prohibit this, right?
That's correct. The current law does not. He's ordering this, and he's also formed a group that includes Jack Hanna, the emeritus director here at the Columbus Zoo, which is housing six of the animals, and also Sheriff Lutz and several others, to come up with probably stricter regulations. But Governor Kasich insists that this will be done with, the through the legislature and then the executive. So he wants the law on the books first, and then the law he wants enforced.
A remarkable trade going on and a remarkable situation where we're reading, Tom, that there are places in this country, maybe Ohio, where there's less regulation to own a lion, tiger, bear, cheetah, leopard than to own just a dog, a pet dog.
I don't know. That might be true. I'm not sure. But there are, obviously, you have to get a license for a dog. That's correct.
Do you feel public opinion in Ohio turning on this? Who's been lobbying to keep this real free open trade in exotic animals? Do you think you'll end up with something stricter? What's your guess, Tom?
I would say, Tom, that we will have a stricter law. I'm not sure how strict. Jack Hanna, when he was talking at this scene on last Wednesday, indicated that there's some breeders and what he called responsible owners that he does not want to see swept up in new expansive laws. So it will be vetted. I think that the general sense is now here that this was just out of hand. I mean, at the time that it happened, they were working from two different lists. They didn't know exactly how many animals were on the compound. They had closed schools in the area because they didn't want a child at a bus stop running and maybe being mistaken for food from a lion. I mean, that's what was said at the conference. That, you know, we couldn't have these children at bus stops running and then, you know, have a mountain lion.
Taken down by a lion. These sentences are just wild in themselves to take on board. Tom Borgerding with WOSU in Columbus, Ohio, public radio there. Tom, we really appreciate your being with us today. Thanks so much for joining us.
Tom, thank you.
This is Tom Ashbrook on Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the Ohio animal tragedy and America's trade in exotic creatures and the laws that allow it. Just astonishing scenes out of Ohio last week on Wednesday. One day after the animals were released and all the shooting, residents were talking to local TV, reacting to the news that dozens of lions, tigers, bears were roaming their neighborhoods.
It's scary. You don't know where they're at. And if the cops can't catch them, they're going to be running wild, crazy.
Director Emeritus of the Columbus Zoo, Jack Hanna, spoke with George Stephanopoulos on Good Morning America yesterday about the decision to kill nearly 50 exotic animals set loose in Zanesville.
Think about this, George. Even if the Columbus Zoo were 55 miles away, the wild's 25 miles. If we'd gotten there with, let's say, 30 tranquilizer guns, what do you do when you see all these animals? You see behind me, maybe you can't see it. I don't know if you see this bear here. Picture about three of those, or two, how many grizzlies there were, coming down on a road, along with 18 tigers, along with 16 or 17 lions and lionesses, all at once just going all over the neighborhood. I can say this, George, after working for the animals all this time. We would have had a scene yesterday morning that would have been the most incredible scene we probably wouldn't ever want to see.
Incredible scene, no doubt, but this traffic goes on day in, day out, week in, month out around the country. Here's an amateur recording made in April at the Lolly Brothers Livestock Market. You can hear a giraffe handler and auction crier making their pitch, pitching a young female giraffe with a starting price in the tens of thousands of dollars.
This little female here is one of the nicest, tamest little female giraffes I've ever had around. I say this is her first time away from home. She's in here in a sale ring with all the noise and all the commotion going on. She's not an idiot.
$55,000, $56,000.
Just one little piece, a giraffe being auctioned off there in Missouri. We're talking about this whole picture today. Joining me right now from Washington is Wayne Pacelli. He's president and CEO of the Humane Society of the United States. Mr. Pacelli, thanks for being here.
Hey, Tom.
What do you think about the state of law in this country when it comes to the trade in and hold private holding of exotic creatures?
Well, generally speaking, Tom, it's entirely deficient. There are 18 states that forbid private ownership of dangerous wild animals as pets, big cats, bears, primates, large constricting snakes, alligators, and crocodiles. But those are all pretty recent. We've been lobbying at the Humane Society of the United States for those in the last few years, and we've really been shouting from the rooftops in Ohio for some time now. And as you mentioned earlier in your setup piece, there was a negotiated agreement that we reached with former Governor Strickland and also with the state's leading agricultural organizations to include exotics as kind of front and center in terms of new policies needed. And Governor Strickland issued a very strong order in January banning the acquisition of dangerous wild animals as pets and as roadside attractions. But Governor Kasich did not extend it. But as you indicated, it's not just Ohio. It's Wisconsin, it's South Carolina, it's Oklahoma. There is a robust trade in dangerous exotic animals, and they may be used for the pet trade. They may go to canned hunting facilities where the animals are shot in a fenced enclosure for a fee and a guaranteed kill arrangement. They may go to some other roadside menagerie. They may go for other purposes, and it is truly a Wild West situation. We've been trying to get control of it, but it's been very difficult to tame the problem.
Who's lobbying against you on this, Wayne? Who wants this trade to go on so robustly? What's the argument?
Well, the big group is actually based in Ohio. It's called the Ohio Association of Animal Owners, and it lobbies against legislation in Ohio. It's been fighting us for years, and you know, the group is really not that powerful, but they're strident and they're loud, and it taps into this notion, which you mentioned again in some of your comments earlier on the program, that there's some right that any private citizen has to keep any animal they want, and that has carried the day with some of these states. And, you know, obviously Governor Strickland took this action and put a stop to it, but then it wasn't renewed. You know, ironically, one of the problems with that rule is that, or one of the standards of that rule is that there aren't enough places for all these dangerous exotics to go. There are not enough sanctuaries and accredited zoos to take them. So we grandfathered in those folks who have them, but we did set up with Strickland some minimal standards, including you couldn't be grandfathered in if you were convicted of animal cruelty, and Terry Thompson was. So as of May 1st this year, if the Strickland rule had been extended, he should not have had those animals, and maybe this tragedy could have been prevented.
But what is it that you would really like to see, Wayne? Are you just want to put a tag on them like a dog, saying they're registered with
no.
the state? Would that really change the situation?
No, Tom. I don't want to regulate it. I want to ban that trade. There's no reason for a person to have a chimp in their backyard or an African lion in their basement. I mean, these animals don't belong in our homes, and they don't belong in these roadside menageries. It's suitable to have them in accredited zoos. It's suitable to have them in sanctuaries where the sanctuaries are responding to a crisis and providing a home to an animal who cannot be released into the wild. But just having a Terry Thompson or having a Sam Mazzola or these other notorious animal owners and dealers operating, you know, willy-nilly without any safety standards is wrong. I mean, private citizens should not have these animals. In 2003, we passed a law in Congress to ban the interstate transport of big cats for the pet trade. A bill to ban the interstate transport of primates for the pet trade has been blocked. And the Fish and Wildlife Service right now, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, is sitting on a rule to ban the import and interstate transport of 9 species of large constricting snakes, and it's the reptile owners who are creating a ruckus, and the Obama administration seems to be caving into them at this moment.
Reptile owners creating a ruckus, a much bigger trade than I really had any sense of here, and in so many states, very, very lightly regulated. Wayne Pacelli with the Humane Society of the United States, president and CEO there, looking for more. We'll see what comes out of Ohio. Wayne, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you.
Here's from a congressional hearing just last month. This is a Florida-based snake breeder, David Barker, protesting planned federal legislation to ban the importation of certain species of large snakes. And Florida's got an issue with the largest of snakes now loose in the Everglades. Here he said, states should be allowed the freedom to regulate this industry as they see fit without heavy-handed federal intervention. And here he says is why.
The simple truth is that the proposed action, one, will not solve or correct any problem regarding these snake species in South Florida. And two, it will destroy American businesses and it will damage hundreds of thousands of people economically. And three, it threatens as many as 1 million law-abiding American citizens and their families with the penalty of a felony conviction for pursuing their livelihoods, for pursuing their hobby, or for simply moving with their pet to a new state.
For snake, you can just substitute lion or tiger or bear or giraffe, you name it, and that's the kind of argument that's been made around the country to keep this trade flowing. We all saw Ohio last week. Joining us right now is Peter Laufer. He's a journalist, broadcaster, documentary filmmaker, professor of journalism at the Oregon School of Journalism and Communication. He's paid a lot of attention to this trade. He's written 3 books on the exotic animal trade. The most recent, just out, is called No Animals Were Harmed. Also author of Forbidden Creatures, Inside the World of Animal Smuggling and Exotic Pets. He joins us today from Paris, of all things. Peter Laufer, thank you very much for being with us.
A pleasure to be with you, Tom. Good day.
I was astounded by the scale of this trade. I mean, I'm looking here. We saw all these 18 Bengal tigers dead on the ground there in Ohio. I'm reading here there are, in the Los Angeles Times, there are only 3,200 left in the wild in Asia. There are more in backyard captivity in the United States than in the wild, 5,000 in the U.S. now, and that's just tigers. What is the scale of this trade, Peter?
Well, the scale of the trade is enormous. The tiger number is parroted around, and nobody knows for certain if that 5,000 number is correct.
Okay.
What is clear is that there are tigers, other big cats, long snakes, as you've been discussing, great apes, who are in captivity, bred in captivity, kept as exotic pets, and kept for nefarious other activities, such as the canned hunts that you were talking about. That 5,000 figure, though, is unknown, and that's part of what one, I think, should be concerned about. It's unknown because there's no census, there's no regulation, there is no way for you and me or anybody else to find out how many of these animals are where, under what conditions. And we learned with what happened in Ohio last week how incredible this all can be.
So give us a sense. Maybe we don't have exact numbers, but you know this world as well as anyone, a sense of the scale or, in any case, the species range of what's being traded and held privately in this country when it comes to exotic animals, Peter.
Yeah, I sure can, Tom, because I, in fact, spent time at the Lally Brothers exotic auctions. You played an excerpt mm-hmm. of some audio from one of the auctioneers, and it's everything from apes to zebras or even things I never heard about until I saw them there in Macon, Missouri at the auction yard. Z-donks, a cross between zebras and donkeys, just an incredible animal to see. And I talked with people who were buying them. The auction I went to lasted 2 or 3 days. I can't remember. It was a while back. It was packed, and there was a steady stream of people buying monkeys and camels and again, everything from A to Z to take home, to have supposedly as a pet, or to show off, to draw attention to their businesses, to sell tickets to roadside zoos.
Mm-hmm.
And then, again, it's those canned hunts. You might remember that our nation's Vice President Dick Cheney was on one of those canned hunts when he shot his friend in the face.
I didn't realize that. It was an exotic animal. I thought it was just shooting doves or something typical in that region.
It was. Well, it depends also, Tom, on how you define exotic animals. And so much of this, in part because of the lack of regulation, in part because it is a subculture that most of us are unaware of until something happens like Ohio, or we decide to look into it, as I did writing this trilogy of books
yeah.
about animals. It's a world of unknown, and it's a world that is, as you've been discussing all hour, unregulated, and it's a world that we should be concerned about. We also should keep it in perspective. How many people are damaged by these animals as compared with how many people we damage ourselves with car wrecks, or more to the point and a better comparison, dog bites.
Well, I mean, you do hear the stories. A woman's face torn off in Connecticut a few years back, and right on down the line. The trade goes on. Here's a little bit more sound from that livestock market in Macon, Missouri. It's called the Lally Brothers. Everything from apes to zebras and more on the auction block.
164, two times the money. 164, two times the money. Yes, sir. Okay. Guys, if you need a good male, big male ostrich, his trailer's loaded, he can't get him on, guys. I'm jumping right down here. Good big male ostrich.
Good big male ostrich. Let's go to our listeners, Diane in Paint Lick, Kentucky. Diane, thank you very much for calling.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I'm a veterinarian, and when I used to live in Arkansas, I lived about 2 miles away from one of these exotic animal parks, and the conditions were horrendous. And the guy would regularly farm out the baby animals to people to take care of and raise, regardless of what their experience was. One was a Make-A-Wish Foundation. The kid saw the Lion King, and he wanted a baby lion. Well, they brought the lion to us at the veterinary's office because they didn't know how to take care of it, and that's a good point. They have these animals, and how many veterinarians out there are there that can adequately take care of these animals? I even heard that they took the animal to another vet to have it declawed, which is absolutely absurd to me.
What do you think needs to happen here, Diane? As a veterinarian, looking out on this whole big picture, what do you think we need to see happen?
Well, you know, it's bogus. One of your people that you were interviewing said, or the governor said, we're going to have USDA inspections. Well, the fact of the matter is that these inspections are less than adequate. We don't have enough people to do them, let alone have people who know what they're looking at to do them. So the inspections are a bogus.
And meanwhile, the trade goes on and goes on very big. Veterinarian Diane, I appreciate your call. And let me get one more here. Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. Joe, thank you for calling.
Thank you. Hey, how you doing?
Okay, what do you think?
I am one of these people. I'm not saying I keep large cats, but I've kept a lot of snakes, a lot of stuff that people wouldn't be down with. As long as you're a competent individual, I don't see what the problem is, and as long as you're not living in a heavily populated area. I work at a small zoo, not necessarily the ones that are being demonized right here, but when you take these kind of animals out of the hands of a lot of these private facilities, essentially you're taking it away from some of these other smaller, noteworthy zoological institutes. I know that at our facility, we do a lot of collecting of animals for display from various locations in state and out of state.
Yeah. Hey, Joe, let me ask you, you say demonize, but don't the images and the facts out of Ohio kind of demonize themselves here?
I completely agree that there are a lot of people that should not have their hands on these animals, and there should be some regulation, but my concern is some of this regulation that may be instituted is going to be just way overkill, you know, where it's impossible for someone who isn't really wealthy to be able to obtain something small. I'm not saying you shouldn't have money to take care of some of these animals, but...
Yeah. Joe, let me ask you,
you
deal with snakes, and we've seen this picture in Florida of the Everglades and more now. Sometimes it sounds like they're overrun by non-native pythons, boa constrictors, all the rest. How do we avoid that if we have...
I think a big part of the problem is people using the word pet with these animals. These animals are not pets. These are wild animals. They're not domesticated. By any means, you know, some of the mammals, you can argue that a little different, but when you start getting into the snakes and that sort of thing, they're definitely never going to recognize the hand that feeds them. But it should be regulated. I don't really want to say I have a solid plan here, but you can't just take it from everybody because of one dangerous individual that lets his animals loose.
Joe, I appreciate your call. Peter Laufer. How about it? We've got a lot of zoos in this country. I mean, it's not as though we've been morally opposed historically to looking at wild animals in captivity. In fact, you know, they've been public projects to do that. Is it different when it's private somehow?
Yeah, sure it is. It's different that when it's private, and there are plenty of public zoos that have had all sorts of problems with their animals, the way they maintain their animals, even if you do accept the idea of a zoo being appropriate behavior for human animals to take on. But the private zoos with no consequential oversight, places where there's breeding, that charge admission, that sell animals and call themselves zoos, sure, there may well be some that do a fine job. Undoubtedly there are, but there are appalling conditions.
Peter Laufer, hold it right there if you would. We have to take a short break here. Peter Laufer with us, author of Forbidden Creatures and No Animals Were Harmed. When we come back, we'll talk with Martine Collette in California at the Wildlife Way Station there. We're looking at the Ohio animal tragedy and American law. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the Ohio animal tragedy. We all saw it last week. And America's trade in exotic creatures and the laws that allow it. Here's a scene, a little hard to understand, but from the 2010 documentary, The Elephant in the Living Room, Tim Harrison, an Ohio police officer whose friend was killed by an exotic pet, goes undercover to an exotic reptile auction. Here, Harrison speaks with a man with a young child who just purchased a baby alligator and jokes with him about how big that gator is going to get.
Hey, show me alligator.
Did you get alligator?
Look at that. What'd you get?
I bought it.
You got an alligator? How big is that thing going to get?
Like 8 foot.
8 foot? He's going to be bigger than you.
8 foot, he's going to be bigger than you. Ho, ho, ho. And here once more is Jack Hanna, Director Emeritus of the Columbus Zoo, telling ABC last week that things are going to change in Ohio to make sure a Zanesville-type incident does not happen again.
The good that's coming of this is I was on the phone with the governor twice yesterday morning. I was with him in conference calls all day yesterday. Immediately, those auctions will be stopped in the state of Ohio. So if you're going to do an auction, I'd leave. Those folks that have animals like this that this man had, I suggest you go to another state because you'll be getting a knocking on your door here in about 6 to 8 months, and it won't be a pleasant knock. And we will be taking these animals to the wilds, to a repository there, and we'll find beautiful homes for them because we're not going to go ahead and continue this.
Jack Hanna, those auctions will be stopped in Ohio. Well, we'll see. Jim's calling from Exmoor, Virginia. Jim, you're on the air.
Hi. I just like to make the point that I think Jack Hanna is part of the problem. I've been writing about this issue for over 20 years, notably a cover story for Audubon in 1993. I went to these auctions personally in Missouri and in Ohio, and I'm just... Yeah, I just have these images of Jack Hanna on national television holding a baby tiger or a baby lion or some animal in his lap and, you know, and talking about it as if it's just perfectly normal. And then
you mean normal to be playing around with an animal like that, and of course they may be sedated or something.
Yeah,
there, so people
the image that you too can have a wild animal in your lap. And mm-hmm. So, you know, I just wanted to say that I think he's part of the problem of this exotic trade and others like him who sort of make it seem acceptable.
Jim, we will look at that. I appreciate your call. Let me hold that one. One more here. Richard in Westboro, Massachusetts. Richard, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
Okay. What do you what do you think?
Here's what I find confounding about the story. It seems to me a guy like Mr. Thompson, a private rancher of exotic animals, apparently, and maybe I've got my facts wrong, he's been in the business for 28 years.
Mm-hmm. Long time.
Apparently, again, the numbers may be accurate, that he had up to 35 Bengal tigers on his property. How is it possible, in all of this time, if the Bengal tiger is on the official endangered species list, that international wildlife funds of all kinds haven't been putting up a political and media stink for years?
Well, they have been talking about it. The numbers that we were citing here, 3,200 left in the wild, that is from the World Wildlife Fund. But
I understand that, but it's been for years it's been going on. I don't understand how somebody like that can go on with impunity, regardless of the political climate here in the United States.
I can answer that question.
Peter Laufer, please jump right in there.
Yeah, here is the thing that complicates this further, Tom, and that is, your callers have been calling these animals wild. It's really a misnomer. They are something else. When these animals are bred in captivity, it, at least that's my conclusion from the mm-hmm. research I've done for these books, it's not reasonable to call them wild, and it certainly is not reasonable to call them tamed, but they are something else. And they're also something else in terms of how they are listed by international treaty that regulates in the trade in animals across national borders.
But they're certainly
so
not an native, and they're certainly endangered, some of them.
An animal that's captive bred, Tom, is not subject to the same kind of rules and regulations as one that is wild, born and raised in the wild.
But just because it's captive bred doesn't turn it into a pussycat, obviously. And these are endangered species.
Absolutely not. On the contrary, it could, in fact, make it more problematic because it's, to use a human term, confused. What is it? It doesn't know either.
And genetically, any number of these are endangered. I mean, look at 3,200 Bengal tigers in the wild. That's not many. 5,000 in captivity. It's almost a situation now where it's the captive ones. Well, I mean, they do, but if these numbers are anywhere near right, Peter, they've got the majority of the genetic pool left alive is in captivity now.
But that's problematic also, Tom, because that genetic pool, then, if these animals are being bred by amateurs, which is really the only way to talk about the pool of people engaged in this private ownership, mm-hmm. if they are being bred, then the genetic pool is affected in ways that it wouldn't be in the wild, And consequently, you are not preserving that which you are concerned about in the wild, while at the same time you could be giving aid and comfort to those who are concerned about the depletion of animals in the wild, saying, well, don't worry about it. We've got 5,000 of them in Texas. Well, you don't have 5,000 equivalent animals to what's disappearing in Asia.
Not the same thing. Will in Nashville, Tennessee. Will, you're on the air.
Hi, well, thank you, Tom, for taking my call.
Yeah.
I think this is sick. It seems to be so much more about power over another living creature than love. You keep a dog because of unconditional love. You want that dog to wag its tail and lick your hand. And you keep a cat because you want to be disregarded by an animal or love an animal and have it in your lap. You don't keep a crocodile because of love. You keep a crocodile because of some power struggle. And I believe that's sick, that this is happening at the expense of another living creature.
Will, that's
my comment.
Will, we hear it, and I'm glad for your call. Let me take that one, if I may. Peter Laffer, stand by in Paris. I want to go to Santa Clarita, California, and Martine Collette. She's the founder there of the Wildlife Way Station. She's an animal expert for the city of Los Angeles. The Way Station is a 160-acre enclave in the Angeles National Forest north of L.A., rescues, rehabilitates, and relocates both native and exotic wildlife. Martine Collette, thank you very much for being with us.
Good day to you, Tom. How are you?
I'm well, and you hear our listener there in Nashville wondering, who owns these big creatures, especially, you know, alligators, tigers, lions, bears, leopards? Who tends to own them and why? What's the motivation, Martine?
Well, there are many motivations. I have been sort of plunged into this work in 1965. I took in my first animal because it was displayed at the Pan Pacific Auditorium, and then the man after the show was not interested. From that point on, I have listened to people and I have asked questions, you know, why do you want this animal?
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people want it, of course, for status, as it was stated previously. A lot of people mistake love, which equates to them, for possession. I love leopards. I love reptiles, so I therefore must own them. I think private ownership for individual people is not a good thing. No one should have a lion in a city.
Why do you say that, Martine? Why?
The Wildlife Way Station has received 76,000 animals from its inception.
Wow.
We have received them from private individuals. We have taken them from circumstances just about the Ohio incident. We were involved in a horrific incident in Idaho where a bunch of lions broke out from a very ramshackled facility.
Mm-hmm.
And 18 of them were shot by the sheriff's department because no one really knew what to do and how to get to them. We brought back 27 animals into the Wildlife Way Station, some of which were pregnant. And, of course, our population then grew the moment that the animals delivered their babies. There are legitimate reasons for animals in private hands, people who do educational programs, people who do outreach. I know, for example, we used to do an outreach program for the state of Arizona from the northwest to the southwest. There is not a zoological park for schools. There was no place for kids to go to get any education. So I know of a lot of people who do legitimate educational programs.
With private animal holdings, with their own menageries, you're saying?
With private animal holdings. They are licensed by the Department of Agriculture.
Mm-hmm.
They are inspected by the Department of Agriculture. But we're not talking about legitimate people here.
Boy.
I find something horrific, especially for primates, people who individually own chimpanzees or individually own monkeys.
Because of primate intelligence, or why especially horrific there compared to a lion or tiger?
Primates, they're very, very intelligent. Mm-hmm. They also are a species that does very well, must have its own kind. It must live in a group or a troop. It must live in family groups. We have received over the years many, many monkeys about, well, you know, I bought the monkey, I love the monkey, it is now 5 years of age, and it's now biting my girlfriend, or it's now biting my uncle when he comes over to visit.
Well,
a monkey is extremely frustrated.
Mm-hmm.
Living in somebody's home, being treated like a baby. A monkey is not a baby. A monkey needs other monkeys.
And that's just the beginning of the list of species that get picked up and held here. Martine, please stand by there in Santa Clarita, and Peter Lauper. Camille in Broken Arrow, Oklahoma. Camille, thank you very much for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call. I've worked in the education department in two different zoos, and people tend to think that animals have to have sharp teeth or big claws like a bear or a lion or something in order to be dangerous. But just as your guest was just saying, primates can be very dangerous, and someone on your site commented that, you know, oh, a giraffe, that's not dangerous. Well, giraffes can run 35 miles an hour, and they kick very hard. So if you get kicked by a giraffe, you're going to be in serious trouble. So I think the public really needs to understand that exotic animals are not something that you can just have in your house, even if you think it's an animal that may not be dangerous.
Camille, you've worked in public zoos or private zoos, may I ask?
Public zoos.
And what do you think of the whole idea of private menageries, whether for exhibit or not?
I think that they really need to be regulated. I think if you're going to have one, you need to follow the same rules that the public zoos are following. I think the AZA should have to be accredited if you're going to have these exotic animals. There's a lot of training required and a lot of special knowledge as far as feeding and care and safety and making sure they're enclosed properly. So I think everyone who wants to have these animals needs to go through the qualification process and not just be able to go pick one up and put it in their backyard.
Yeah, Camille in Oklahoma, I appreciate your call. Let me get one more here. Hampton, Virginia, Kate. Hi, Kate. You're on the air.
Hi. I just wonder if we should keep slapping laws onto things like this. I mean, isn't it more to do with ownership? You know, I mean, there are so many instances that happen with dogs and, you know, other domestic animals that come from just how you are as an owner, whether you, you know, take care of your animals and I just wonder if we should keep putting laws on everything when something goes wrong.
Well, what do you think about the Ohio situation? You probably saw the pictures of all those dead animals.
It's very sad, but I mean, I wonder what are the stats as far as just domesticated animals and what kind of problems? I mean, I know it's obviously different, but there are so many problems that come with those, and yet, I mean, should we then slap a law on that if we have too many problems that you can't own?
Yep, Kate, we've got it, and I appreciate your call. Peter Lauper, what do you make of that perspective? You know, come on, let's let this go free. This is you can't legislate everything. Back off,
Tom. That perspective is just absolutely absurd. And the Ohio highways that surround the place where all of this happened last week, on one of those highways, a couple of the animals at least were hit, and one at least killed. Well, the car that hit it was subject to a speed limit on that highway. And we are a nation of laws. We regulate things that we realize need to have government oversight, whether it's a dairy so that the milk doesn't make us sick, or some crazy man in Ohio with 50 animals that he's going to let loose to roam around the hills and dales of Ohio. If there are, in fact, cases, and I've visited at least one that I think fits in this category, of an appropriate scene where private individuals own their own animals that are of this ilk, if this is going to go on, then those who are doing a reasonable job of it are not going to mind if they're subject to some oversight by the government of the people here in this country.
Peter,
our country.
Where would the law come in then? I mean, is it just these seven or eight states where the trade flourishes? Does that mean in 42 states or 43? We've got sort of state regulation?
No, Tom, we have laws. A big part of the problem is that there's a patchwork of law. So there are these states like Ohio, a little more than half a dozen of them, where there's no regulation. But regulation comes in often after a disaster. So you were talking earlier about Travis, the chimpanzee, raised, bred in Missouri. I met the breeder there. She sells baby chimpanzees. You want one? I can connect you with her. If you've got $50,000, $75,000, she might have one for you. So she sold this animal to a woman in Connecticut, and that's the case that is notorious where it attacked the woman's friend and
took
maimed
her face off, essentially.
And after the fact, there's a law in Connecticut to prevent it. So we are a nation of laws. We don't have any problem having laws to take care of problems, and those who are engaged, as I said, if there is an argument for appropriate private ownership of exotic animals, they're not going to mind if there's some oversight from the government.
Martine Collette, you've got years of experience in this field. What's your sense after this really dramatic scene in Ohio? Are we likely to get laws reining this in nationally, state by state?
I agree that there have to be regulatory things put into place, because I believe in checks and balances. I believe your intentions might be very good. However, it is for the animal's sake, I believe, that somebody has to check to make sure that the veterinary services are there, that the food is potable, that the enclosures are of a right size, and, of course, are safe enough to maintain the animal there.
And
California
mm-hmm.
has very strict regulations.
And we may see more of that around the country after Ohio. Nobody wants to see lions, tigers, bears, and all the rest out at risk of killing or certainly being killed. Martine Collette with the Wildlife Way Station in Santa Clarita, California, thank you very much for being with us today. And Peter Laufer, author of No Animals Were Harmed and Forbidden Creatures, thank you to you both. Listeners, thanks for joining us today. What a scene. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and NPR.